We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the University City Council study session to order on August 14th, 2023. Before we turn the program over to Mr. Rose, are there any changes to the agenda for tonight? Hearing none, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, tonight we have with us Michael Ribble. He is the with the Buck Company, which is the actuary for our pension board. The presentations that you'll receive tonight will provide you with a overview of the financial position for both the uniform and non-uniform pension plans. In addition to that, it also will provide information on proposed improvements to the non-uniform plan that are under consideration. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ribble.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Council members. Thanks for having me today. Again, I'm Mike Ribble. I am the lead actuary for the city's two retirement systems, the uniformed and non-uniform retirement systems. I've been with Buck my entire career of 30 years, fully credentialed actuary. And we have a lot to cover here. We did a lot of this in a long session already with the board. So I'm going to jump right in. We're going to give an overview of the valuations that we perform, because that'll get you up to speed on where the valuations said about the funded status of the plans and the contribution requirements. And then we're going to address, okay, well, if you have some plan provisions that you want to propose, what impact that might have on the contributions and funded status of the plans. So jumping right into the valuations in the first presentation, just a very quick overview. It's a snapshot valuation. We do it every year for the city. This one was data collected as of January 1st, 2023. Assumptions and methods were updated this year based on an five-year experience study we performed. And we collected assets every year at the end of the year, December 31st, 2022. We'll talk a little bit about how we smooth those assets, because there was a big loss in the market this year. And we use a smoothing technique that's common in the industry to help mitigate the fluctuation in contributions would be if you just always recognize the market value. So that's an actuarial value of assets. We didn't have any plan provision changes in this valuation. If the city was to pass a law change, we would reflect it likely in the next valuation. The key results of the valuation that we'll talk about are the health of the system, the funded status, and then again, the contributions that go in. I'm going to go quickly through. We're not going to review all this, but the population changes, a few things to note. You know, the pay increases were a little bit higher than expected as far as total average pay increase for those that stayed was about 5.3% versus 3% expected. Everything else was in line, but retirements and pay increases are typically the things that cause us to have higher contributions than we would have otherwise projected. So we'll talk about that in a minute. This is a long list of the experience study changes we made to the assumptions. I'm not going to get into it in any detail, but basically we got every 5 years we review the assumptions and we get it up to speed based on a five-year history, what we're seeing elsewhere, and we recommend changes to the board, and the board approves those assumption changes. And so that is a change that happened since the last valuation. An overview of some of the changes. Again, the assumption changes caused an increase, and this is now focusing on the police and fire only again, an increase in the unfunded actuarial accrued liability of about $1 million, 1034. We had plan experience also caused a loss greater than expected, mainly due to compensation increases of about $1 million. And then we had market return of minus 13.4%. And there I talked about the smoothing. We recognized a return of 2.1% due to the smoothing. So we have some losses from this year that we're going to be reflecting in future years. But basically, we have a 6.5% assumption last year. We changed it to 6.8% because we changed how the administrative expenses are handled. But basically, we recognize 2.1% return, and we're holding some losses are going to have to bring in over the next 4 years. So all in all, the unfunded liability, which is the debt of the pension system. It's how much we have in the system on assets, or how much we want to have on, it was the liabilities. Liabilities are the present value of the accrued benefits to date. And so we measure that every year, and the difference between the actual accrued liability that we're wanting to be in the fund minus the actuarial assets in the fund as unfunded accrued liability increased from 7.9 million to 11.2 million this year. And in fact, what that caused was a contribution increase of 1.7 million January 1st, 2022 to 2.275 million at January 1st, 2023. So significant jump in the contribution requirement. On the next slide, this is a summary side by side of those numbers I talked about. The market value was 13.4% down. You can see the drop from 31.7 to 26.8. But the actuarial value just dropped a little bit, 22.3 to 29.3 to 29.1 million. We did, in the experience study, we also went to a best practice of the true five-year smoothing. So we're holding 2.3 million losses to be recognized in the future. That's why that's the difference in the 29.1 actuarial value and the 26.8 market value. The accrued liability or intra-age normal liability that's required to that we calculate, this is 37 up to $40 million. So this was due to all the things we talked about, the actual pay increases being a little higher than expected and the experience study, and then the overall unfunded accrued liability increase. The funded ratio, that's the how much you have in the fund divided by how much the accrued liability is, how much we're targeting. That dropped from 78.8 to 72.3. Again, the market returns, getting the experience study done and recognizing some of the earlier retirement and higher salary increases. So again, the contribution increase 1.7 to 2.3, that's a January 1st, 2023 contribution. We recommend to the extent contributions are coming in later that we would increase that 6.8%, which is the investment return assumption, you know, if contributions come out throughout the year to make that adjustment. That's a January 1st, 2023 figure. As a percent of payroll, we've mounted it increased from 17.9 to 22.8. Any questions on the police and fire? That's a lot of numbers.
If you would briefly highlight why the unfunded liability increase so dramatically.
Right. Well, we see this a lot in the police and fire. A little bit of it was the historical salaries. When we reviewed the five-year history of salary increases, they were higher than we expected. We were assuming 3%. Now we're assuming 3.75%. So what that does is immediately increases your accrued liability. Same with retirement rates. We saw more people retire, more police officers and firefighters retiring earlier. And so instead of just taking those losses as somebody retires and, oh, they retired earlier than we assume, the five-year experience study sets us on the path to what we're seeing and expect. And unfortunately, it's all in one direction for those two things. And then the market return, you know, that's all based on the investment returns we're seeing everywhere in 2022, which was the -13.4%. That was actually the biggest driver of the increase. So a large increase, but three big factors.
We have questions?
Ramirez and council members, I was hopeful that you would wait until his presentation concluded, or you could, which do you prefer,
Mr. Well, I wanted to be sure, because we're not going to talk about the police and fire again, so I wanted to be sure we stop there.
So I'm happy to be interrupted. Okay, in between each segment. Okay, yeah. So each section.
So I guess my question, and it may be as much to the city manager, because I don't think it is I'm trying to understand, where's the communication pattern on the salary increases that were expected versus what were actual? Because you said three times that the salaries were more than expected. And so I'm just trying to understand the regularity of communication between City Hall and either the actuaries or the pension board or the pension board and whomever, because that's just, that's an interesting thing to say that communication was part of the reason. That's one. And then number two, I am assuming that just by the fact that we're in the community, we realize that our police officers and our firefighters don't typically have the years of service within a tenure as long as other folks, because they do tend to retire early. So I'm not sure that that's a surprise either. I get the market drop too, but I'm trying to discern if most of the time our police officers retire earlier and our firefighters retire earlier, then isn't that already built into the system?
Can I address that? The ones that retire when they retire, if we're assuming they retired at age 60 and they retire at 58, now we have all these probabilities, but just as a simple example, now that member, that firefighter or police officer is receiving two more years of payments than we would have expected based on our assumptions. So yes, we had assumptions in place that have been in place, I think, for 7 years. We've been asking to do an experience study for a few years. We finally were able to, the city finally agreed to, I guess, do a 5-year experience study this year. We did it we started last fall and we wrapped it up in April. And what it did is review the 5-year history of retirements and what we're seeing elsewhere and adjust those assumptions to be more in line with what we expect. It's not that there was a surprise. I mean, we've been seeing it come along. It's just that we've been recognizing it 1 year at a time. And now we're saying those that are currently in service, we're kind of having earlier expectations of their retirements, and that jumps up the line.
But we really don't have any, do we have any firefighters who are over, this may be a little bit anecdotal, but I don't know any of them that are over 60, and maybe there are a few, but I don't know that any of this is the uniform officers tend to retire earlier than the non-uniforms. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the communication on the salary adjustments, is that something that came from the study, or do you get regular communication from City Hall on salaries?
Every year we collect pay data as part of the valuation, and we're seeing it come in. So maybe 2 years ago, pays were up higher than we expected, but that's just going to cause a lot, you know, that's just going to cause a 1-year loss that we recognize for that year. But when you study it, when you take a step back and do an experience study, now you're changing your assumption about what all future pay increases will be. So instead of assuming 3% per year, we're now assuming 3.75% per year. So we're kind of getting ahead of the fact that it for the current actives. So even a new hire today is costing more than they would have because we're assuming higher pays. Now, if the pays end up being lower, then we'll trickle it back a little bit. But that's what the 5-year experience study showed, and that's what the board approved for an assumption.
If there are no other questions, we'll just continue forward.
Okay, non-uniformed. Okay, non-uniformed. The biggest thing we saw there was average pay was up 5.7%, and total payroll was up 11.2%. There were 6 more members this year actively employed than last year, so that causes an uptick. We did the same experience study, reviewed all the retirements. Some of that was a savings, a decrease in the liability because they had fewer retirements and more terminations than we expected or earlier. So more good news on them was the assumption change decreased that unfunded liability $1.1 million. And then the plan experience during the year, the salaries did bump up the liabilities $1.2 million more than expected. So those two things kind of offset each other. Market value return, again, almost down 13%. And the actuarial value of assets smoothing for that point was 5.2% recognized return. So all in all, that plan, the total pension debt or unfunded liability decreased from $2.28 million to $1.52 million. and the contribution, and it seems counterintuitive because the liability is down, but some of the changes we made increased the normal cost of benefits. We can show the breakdown when we get into this further, which is the cost that you pay for each year of service. That went up a little bit due to our assumption changes. So total policy contribution as of January 1st, 2022, went up a little bit from $695,000 to $714,000 as of 1/1/23. And again, that's mostly due to the asset losses that the contribution went up. This is a side-by-side of the last year's results and this year's results. Again, the market, you can see the market value dropped from 31.7 to 27.4. But the asset, the actuarial value of assets actually went up a little bit, and that's due to the change in method we made during the experience study to go to a true five-year smoothing. So we brought in some of the minus 13% return, but we still have 4 years of bringing that in, just like the police and fire. But all in all, the liabilities were up a little bit, 0.4 million, and the assets were up 1.2 million on actuarial basis. So the unfunded actually went down 0.8 million. On this slide, just to give you the breakdown, because we're going to go through some of these numbers during the other presentations, focusing on the left column, this is the 2023 valuation results. Normal contribution, cost contribution, again, it's the cost to pay for one more year of service for your non-uniform employees. We did add administrative costs into that, which is why we increased that valuation interest rate from 6.5 to 6.8. It's just a net-net. We were taking that those administrative costs out of the investment returns, but the best practice on an actuarial basis and required for accounting is to take those out of the, to load a normal cost contribution so that you're paying for your administrative costs every year. The second line item under the 546 is the 13-year amortization. That's the pension debt. We have 1.52 million of unfunded accrued liability. And the board has adopted, they reset it a couple of years at 15 years, and it's a closed amortization period. So it's 13 years left at January 1st, 2023. So that's that 1.5 million amortized like a house payment, or you have 13 years left. Of payment at 6.8% interest. So the total contribution went up from 695 to 714. And as a percent of pay, it actually, because payroll was up so high, the percent of pay, it actually went down from 10.1% of pay to 9.3% of pay. All right, any questions on that one?
The losses that we experienced, although, and I realize it goes across the board, but you probably see a number of these. Are the losses that we experienced in our portfolio pretty similar to other plans?
Yeah, for the calendar year.
Yes.
We see between negative 10 to negative 15, and you were somewhere right around negative 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very much in line. So now, using that as a baseline, what I just reviewed, we're going to go through the three or four provision changes that were recommended. I think a few of them have been recommended to the council. A few of them are maybe still under review. The first one we're going to review is a change to the vesting requirements. And the current, in order to become vested for a benefit, so you get a benefit, an annuity when you retire, you have to have 10 years of service in the non-uniform plan. So all these changes we're proposing are from the non-uniform plan. We're not proposing it.
I just want to share with the mayor and council and the audience, yep, the reason that the focus is on the non-uniform plan is because the uniform plan is not at the level where you can make changes that have a negative financial impact to the plan. So it is at 72%. I believe the level has to be at 80% funded. And you compare that to the non-uniform plan, which now is at 95% funded. So that's why these proposed or considered improvements to the non-uniform plan aren't also being considered for the uniform plan.
Thank you. So the current plan provision is 10 years of vesting for all employees. If they don't vest, they get a return of contribution. So they put in 3% of their pay each month and it grows with, I think, 5% interest. They have an account balance. And if they don't stay 10 years or invest and they leave, they're entitled to get that money back as a return of contributions. If they do stay the 10 years, then they are entitled to a percent of their pay at retirement as an annuity, a lifetime annuity. So the proposed change is to move the 10 years back to 5 years. So that, you know, when you stay 5 years, you're vested in a retirement benefit. You can keep growing that benefit because you'll get more years of service and your pay goes up and you can earn higher benefits. But rather than if you're between 5 and 10 and you leave, you're only entitled to a return of contributions. Now you have a benefit to take with you when you retire. So for this analysis, we kind of do a side-by-side. What if we had done the 1/1/23 valuation with this in place? The answer will be different depending on the timing, if and when it passes. But the relatively speaking, this is how we do things in standard practice to measure whether or not you want to decide to move forward with a provision. So this first column where it says current provisions is the same valuation results that I just communicated on the non-uniform as of January 1st, 2023. So focusing on the top half, the right column is the potential plan provision. So moving from 10 years to 5 year vesting, you see the assets of course don't change, but it's the liabilities. How much is accrued to date? It actually decreases. So that's a little bit counterintuitive because we're providing more benefits, but the amount that we've accrued, because most people we're accruing less refunds, which are closer payments. So the liability accrued to date actually decreases a little bit from 31.2 to 31.1. So a couple of lines down, the debt of the pension fund actually decreases 97,000 as a result of changing this funded status. So the actuarial funded ratio then, of course, improves from 95.1 to 95.4 because you have less accrued benefits when you make this change. However, the employer normal cost, which is the cost to pay for each year's benefits, is higher because you're putting in more money 1 year at a time towards someone's actual retirement rather than just for them to get a refund. Retirement benefit is much more valuable. So that would increase from 546,000 to 576,000. The 13-year amortization difference is the difference of that 97,000 over 13 years. So we have an increase of, say, 29,000 in contributions and a decrease of 10,000 or 11,000 in contributions. So a net increase in contribution of 18,000. So the actuary is saying, okay, January 1st, 2023, this year, 2023, we need to put in 714,000 to maintain the board's funding policy. Now, if you put in this, we would say, okay, you need to put in 733,000. So about $18,000 more. Because the percent of pay went from 9.3 to 9.6, it's more than 0.25% of pay. We had to do a formal actuarial cost note on there and a 10-year projection. The 10-year projection showed that it's going to be 18 to 20K per year over the 10 years difference, about 0.3% of pay. Any questions on the vesting? Okay. This is the fun one. So buyback, service buyback analysis. So I talked about when members leave non-vested, they get a refund of contributions. And when they leave vested, they get a benefit at 65, but it's based on their service today. So it's like paid in the way in the future. We were asked to do an analysis. What happens if we rehire these members? They used to work at this city, and they come back. They leave for some period of time and come back. So we did an analysis, and we don't know how many the city is interested in rehiring, if there even are, but The request was to analyze, well, what is the cost of the system if we do rehire somebody? So we had to just kind of do some straw, you know, some different samples of ideas about, you know, this is going to, if you hire somebody at this age or this service, then this is the cost. So the first group, the two groups we looked at what if they were non-vested and they came back? So they weren't vested. If they weren't vested now, they could come back if they don't leave for more than a year, and they can come back. And if they haven't taken that money back, but if they do either of those things, if they go for more than a year or they take their money back, when they come back, they can't do anything about it. They're just a new employee. So they've got their money back. It's just like a new hire. The proposed provision for that is to be a little bit more flexible on their prior service. So the conditions we were given was, what if the member comes back within 10 years of having left, and then they've done either one thing, they haven't taken their contributions, if their contributions are still out there, then they can come back and all their services will be restored. If they have taken their refund, they can get their service restored. So they worked for the city for 6 years, they leave, and for not more than 10 years, they took their, you know, $50,000 out of the system. They have to pay that back with interest from the date they took the money until, I think it says termination, but from the date they took the money until the time they come back to pay the interest on that at 5% is the current rate. So we looked at that, and we'll talk about the cost of that on some individuals. Similarly for vested members. So they left the city, they already had 10 years of service. They're due a benefit at age 65. If they are rehired, current provisions say you're treated as a new employee. So you have this benefit from your first service, called a benefit, and you have this service, you just start a new benefit. You have to become vested again, everything. So it's a plus B benefit. You're going to get two different benefits, but the first benefit's based on your pay when you were younger, and the second benefit would be pay when you retire. So the proposed provision, if the rehire, is what we call bridging the service, so that all their services combined in a new service. So they have their 10 years and they come back and work maybe 5 or 10 years, then you combine all that and pay a retirement benefit at retirement based on the pay they have at then. So it is an advantage to the member to do that typically. So we're not going to go through all this. But we looked at a few here, and I'll flip forward even more because I can quickly tell you. So just as one example on slide 11, this is a participant who was age 35 at their original hire. They stayed 5 years, so they weren't vested. They terminated at 40, and they came back 5 years later at age 45, and their base pay was $60,000 at rehire. The first column is what are they getting now? If we don't bridge the service, then they have no accrued liability for their new service. And because they took their money back, they don't have anything in the systems. They have no accrued benefit, and all they have is an annual contribution you have to pay for them as $4,300. So that's the total, $4,300 annual contribution for this one participant. The second column says, okay, well, we're going to take all your old service and you've accrued that. We're going to bridge it. We're going to forget the fact you left, and we're going to pretend you just had a continuous service. And this isn't uncommon to bridge service, but you can see the cost of it. So that now, instead of having zero accrued liability to date, this participant has $32,000 accrued liability. The present value of their expected future benefits now is $32,000. But they have to remember, we have to buy back their service with interest. So they're going to pay $9,400 to do that if they choose to bridge it. So that $32,000 minus the nine is really to the system. It's unfunded accrued liability of $23,000. They pay that over, amortizing that over 13 years is $2,500. The cost for new years of service when you bridge is less because you're spanning over longer time is only $3,300. But total contribution of $5,800 versus $4,300 is a $1,500 change in annual contribution for this one participant, which is 2% of the participant's pay. So with that in mind, we went through lots of different scenarios. I don't know if I can. And here's a summary. So we looked at somebody who was rehired at age 55 or age 35, bridged 7 years of service before they left, or they only had 3 years of service, or they left for 7 years and came back, or 3 years. And we just wanted to figure out what was, you know, the quick analysis of what would be the cost of these different things, or if they came back with 25% higher pay than the 60,000 or less. So we looked at all these cases, and you can see the range in the middle column was from 1500 to 2000, 2300 in all our cases. Some of them were $170, some of them were low. We did look at one high impact case, which, backing up one slide, we just wanted to see, okay, what if we pushed the envelope? Somebody's pushing the envelope on coming back. They were hired late in their career at 46. They left at 55. And then 5 years back, you rehire them at age 60 and you pay them $90,000. So there are cases where the cost could be more, $9,300. We don't know all the scenarios. So that's just kind of a stress test on this provision. Are we all following? Because I got to do this again for the vested. All right, I'll do it quicker. So we did the same thing for vested. The base case was somebody that was hired at 30 years, but they had to stay for 10 years. So we said they stay for 15 years to 45, and then they come back 5 years later at age 50 and are paid the $60,000. They had some accrued liability because remember they have that piece of benefit that they're going to get paid at retirement. So that's worth $44,000 right now. And then they're accruing normal costs. But on the other side, if you rehire them and bridge the service, they're getting all that service plus $120,000. I'm sorry, it's not normal cost. The $44,000 is accrued liability. On the first column, the 5188, that's accrued liability. So when you leave, you have a terminated vested benefit that's paid at age 65. Say $400 a month you earned before you left, and that's going to start at 65. It's worth $44,000, and the fund pays for liabilities over 13 years, so it's $5,200. The bridging plan there for this example was a contribution of $10,000, so an increase of $5,000 to bridge the service. But again, we could go through all these details, but I want to flip back. Sorry if I didn't flip before to the end. And we looked at, again, a range of rehires at different ages, 55 or 45, different years of bridge service, different pays, and a high impact case. And really, a lot of those things didn't change. The cost for ones we picked out were between $4,000 and $6,000 in annual contribution, which is not a small amount, but they were in that range. The high impact case, which is on the prior slide, was $11,000 if you had a 25-year-old that worked for 20 years and then left at 45, came back at 50 at a higher pay. So if you start triggering some of those earlier hires that come back and at a later ages and higher pays, then you know you can have a much more sensitive contribution cost. Questions on that one? They're ready to get rid of me. Okay, hopefully that says okay. So the next one, I think, has been a proposed change is for non-vested employees, is a 2% cost of living increase to current retirees and beneficiaries of retirees in payment. So currently the plan has no automatic cost of living adjustments, and there's nothing required by the plan to provide it. If somebody retires with $1,000 per month payable for life, then that's what they get until there's a COLA granted by the city. So the proposal was a one-time cost of living adjustment of 2% for existing retirees and beneficiaries of deceased retirees that are in payment. And so, in other words, that monthly benefit of $1,000 would go up to $1,020 at retirement. If they had a beneficiary that was supposed to get half of that when they die, like $500, that would go up accordingly to $510. So anybody in pay status right now, we looked at it as if it was retroactive to January 1st, 2023 for simplicity. The answer won't much change if the city puts into a COLA into effect October 1st, 2023 or January 21st, 2024, for example. Except that we probably won't recognize it till the next valuation, and it'll be a 2024 cost and not a 2023 cost. So again, the same thing, same idea, principles. The current provisions have that current contribution of $714,000. On the right side, the assets stay the same. Liabilities, present value of accrued benefits go up by 2% of what we are holding for liabilities in the retirees, which is about $14 million we have for retirees, $13.7 million. That's jumping up to about $14 million. So $273,000 of, or $274,000 of present value of expected benefit increases. That's the present value of that 2% increase for all retirees. So to amortize that $274,000 is $198,000, the $271,000. The normal cost doesn't change. The normal cost is only for active participants that accrue benefits. We're just giving a benefit increase to retirees. So the entire increase is in the amortization from 168 to about 198, or $30,000 a year. Again, since the percentage of payroll went from 9.3 to 9.7% of payroll, it was 0.4% increase. Missouri state law says that we had to do an actuarial cost note that was formal, which includes a 10-year projection. But due to the amortization period that's 13 years now and 12 next year and 11 in our projection, that $30,000 stayed pretty constant over the entire period of the projection. So you would expect to pay $30,000 a year over at least the next 10 years to pay for the benefit. Any questions on that one? Okay, the last request here is a request we received, and I think the board, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't provide advice, but I think the board sets amortization periods and methods and assumptions, sometimes with our advice. The amortization is one that, we've been saying, because there's 13 years left and there's going to be 12 years. When it gets down to 4 or 5 years and you have an asset loss like we did this year and you're amortizing it over 5 years, it's going to get expensive. So it's a closed amortization period that's shortening. So you can either reset that, or there's layered amortizations we could get into. There's lots of ways to handle that potential fluctuation that's on the horizon. Right now it's at 13 years. Maybe you can handle the fluctuation. But the request was, well, what if we, instead of doing anything too much, just reset the 13 years to 19 years right now. So that was the request. Everything else stays the same. And, and we looked at this one. I said I was done talking about police and fire, but this is something you could do, the board, or however it's changed, I'm not sure, but you could do this for the police and fire as well. And that was the one that had the big contribution increase. So if we look at this for police and fire, we have the same unfunded accrued liability that we're talking about. We're having to pay for that $11.16 million. If we pay for it over 13 years, it was the $1,236,000. If you pay for it over 19 years, as you can imagine, like a house payment, it's less. It's $996,000. So the total contribution would go down from 2.28 million to 2.035 million. Looks like about $240,000 decrease if that change was made, as a percent of payroll dropping from 22.8 to 20.4. Make sense? Good. Same thing on non-uniform. We have the $1.5 million of pension debt that we're amortizing over 30 years. That wouldn't change. The funded status wouldn't change. All we're changing, normal costs wouldn't change. All we're changing is the component of amortization and how we pay down the debt. It would decrease the pension, the amortization payment each year, all things equal, from $168,000 to $135,000, about a $33,000 drop, for a total contribution of $714,000 to $681,000. And as a percent of payroll, 9.3 down to 8.9. Did I make it? I think that's all I had. A lot of disclosures.
Honorable Mayor and council members, I just wanted to comment that on a couple of these items, it's certainly my intention to move forward to your agenda, the recommendation from the pension board, as well as myself, of changing in the vesting time period, as well as the 2% COLA, both of these impacting the non-uniform plan. The goal is to improve, we hope at some point, the uniform plan as well, but certainly the non-uniform. Both of these changes are intended for recruitment and retention. And so I believe that the last cost of living allowance that was provided to the uniform plan was back in 2006, roughly. I'm sorry, non-uniform plan. So you can only imagine what erosion has occurred as a result of inflation. Also, I would ask that you keep in mind some of the expenditures, major expenditures that will be on the horizon. The police facility, we're estimating that at $24 million. Also, the police in court fixtures, furniture, and equipment, as well as the detention basin project that you will need to have a match for. And we're estimating that around $4 million. So that I'll be continuing to work with the pension boards on the amortization schedule. At this point, it's at 13, and Mr. Ribble has presented the impacts. If we go to 19, I'll certainly attend that meeting with the pension board and express my opinion as a result, as it relates to that. Also, I'll be continuing to work with them on the buyback proposals. Both of those are still being considered by the pension board.
Questions from members of council. Mr. Hales.
Thank you. To kind of bounce back a little bit when we're talking about vesting and some of the earlier proposed changes, where are we with the current plan? How do we stack up relative to some of our municipal peers? And with the proposed changes implemented, how would we stack up?
Mayor, Councilmember Hales, some of the proposed changes that I'm asking that you consider, certainly the cost of living allowance is typical to occur for pension plans. So that's just customary throughout, whether it's a private sector or a government. In regards to the vesting period, it places us in a much more competitive position. Many of the pension plans, this is information that was provided to the pension board, have a vesting period of 5 years. Some have 7 years, but the pension board believed that the five-year period would place us in a more competitive position.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you very much for your presentation. Mr. Rose, anything else?
Mayor, that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Our study session will adjourn and we will start the public session at 6:30. Thank you.